Hi everyone, welcome to another episode of Who We Are, the podcast where we deep dive into the stories behind extraordinary individuals and the people who help shape their journeys. I am Rachel, your host, and today's conversation is truly special. Today, we have the privilege of speaking with the incredible parents behind one of Singapore's rising stars in the world of sport, Max Mader. Max has made waves on the global stage as an elite kite foiler, recently bringing home a historic Olympic medal for Singapore. But behind this young champion is a family with a unique approach to parenting, one that's rooted in resilience, independence, and curiosity. Max's parents, Valentin and Hui King, join us today to share not just how they've supported their son's remarkable achievements, but also how they've cultivated an environment where passion, vulnerability, and personal growth thrive. In this episode, we'll also uncover the values that shaped their parenting philosophy, the lessons they've learned along the way, and how they navigate challenges of raising a world champion while ensuring their other children also feel equally supported and empowered. Without further ado, I am going to start this conversation and I'm so excited. So welcome Hui King and welcome Valentin.
Thank you, Rachel, for having us.
No problem. So excited. So before we begin, for those of us who may not be as familiar with you, could you share with us a little bit about yourself and your journey?
I'm Hui King. I'm the mother of Max Mader, better known as the kite foiler in Singapore.
You also have two other boys.
Yes.
Yeah.
Carl, who's 16 and also a kite foiler, and an 8-year-old. We call him Vijay.
Valentin Jr. Yeah. Yes.
Right. So the boys got the names of the grandfathers, and then we expected the girl, you know, which was a boy in the end. So no more grandfather names. So he got the
daddy's name.
Exactly.
Oh, you know, that's
beautiful. And they also have a Chinese philosopher name each, you know, to connect to our Chinese family tradition.
To their roots. And
right.
That's beautiful.
Exactly.
And both of you are entrepreneurs running your own business as well?
That's correct, mm-hmm, you know, for most of our lives, yes. Yeah. Mm. So we're like an entrepreneur couple, I can say. No, it's true, because any business, you know, that you run with your family, you know, will always have your boss behind. Any entrepreneur will tell you that this is a key role.
So raising a world champion like Max is no small feat, but I think every journey begins somewhere. Can you take us back to the beginning and the earlier days when Max showed a love for sport and competition? And how did that also shape your early journey as parents and the decisions that you made?
I think from young, it's a lot of exposure. Mm. Like he said, you know, he learned to swim before he learned to walk. That's because we are surrounded by waters, and I just want to make sure that they understand water safety.
Survival.
And, yes. And I think we always did sports.
Yeah,
we love sports.
Yeah.
It's a lifestyle.
Yes. So we exposed him to...
So, you know, I got to cycle. Yeah. You know, even they're like just... How do you say toddlers? You just put them in a little chariot behind, you know. Then the moment that they can cycle, you put them on a bicycle, you go, you take them along, you know. That's kids are really good at something, you know.
You know, what are some values that you prioritize as parents for your children and for your family?
Oh, I don't know about values per se, but we have an idea of how we would like them to grow up.
Mm.
Like independence, you said, right?
Yeah.
And this is something you have to start very, very young. And I said that before. And if you believe in something, you will work towards what you want in the end, right? So actually, for me, less is more. You help them to do less, they will do more.
Mm.
And that creates the independence for me.
So tangibly, how did that look like, for example, when they were growing up?
Oh, for example, it starts when he's maybe 3 years old.
Mm.
He has to walk to his caretaker, which is down the street, around the corner.
By himself?
Yes.
At 3 years old?
Yes.
Amazing.
So it's difficult to let go, but, you know, you can tell them, you know, you do this, you do that, and then, you know, you watch out for cars. And, okay, you teach them, and then you let them go. And then I looked out from the window, nervous or whatever. And then when you see him disappear around the corner, I call the neighbor and says, okay, he should be there. That's
he
it.
Is.
Yes.
Wow. That's really interesting because I also read that Max started traveling for competition at a very young age. Was it 11? Yeah. Traveling by himself for competition. So now understanding that you actually nurtured that since he was a toddler at 3 years old, how do you balance and navigate between, you know, pushing your kid yet also protecting him?
Well, you know, like let's take his younger brother, Carl, okay?
Yeah.
I think his first words were not mama, papa. His first words were like, let me down. So he can go off on his own.
Yeah.
He couldn't yet walk. He just crawled and he wanted to explore himself.
Yes.
You know, so you don't really have to push them, you know, if they're ready to explore. Just make sure that they're safe, you know, like keep an eye a little bit. But, you know, as long as there's no car running over them or no hot oil pouring over them or no high energy, no high pressure, you know, it's like if they fall down a little bit, so be it, you know. So they'll quickly discover, you know, that gravity, you know, is a thing that they should observe, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But in general, you know, it's something that the kids are naturally inclined to explore their surroundings.
And, yes.
Wow. So that was how you also slowly inculcated and built independence at a young age.
And because we travel a lot.
Which is natural. You know? I mean, it's like for all of us who can still remember how we grew up, it's natural that the kids roam the forest by the age that they're three or four, they go with the older kids. And, you know, it's normal.
It's normal.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So it's just normalizing what kids have always been.
Yeah.
You know, the same is, let's say about the traveling, they ask, oh, so young. I said, well, we were more comfortable about Max traveling at 11 or 12 years old than parents should be about their daughters traveling with 20, because by the time they were 11 or 12, they have already gone through a good amount of training of how to travel, whom to trust, how does it look, you know, if you can trust someone, okay, you know, you have a reference to this guy who owns that hotel, he recommends that driver. Yeah. So, you know, and he's like, okay, look, if it sounds like this, and this is very, very high probability that it's okay, but if somebody picks you up at the train station that you have never seen, you know, that's not a good probability that they don't have an agenda, which might be, you know, just we trained them from small how it looks. And like a boy who grows up on a farm can milk a cow by the age he's 10 or 8, you know, and drive a tractor by the age he's 10, you know, the kids learn to travel. Mm. They just do what you expose them to, right? And that becomes
normal. And for the practical aspects, right?
Yeah.
Because we've been traveling so much with them since they're young, you know, you start to say, okay, you know, that's how we do check-in, you know, look at the board, what's the gate, then bring us to the gate, please. You know, you lead the way. We follow you, you know. And then they navigate.
Do you also walk them through in situations where if a stranger approaches them, for example, or, you know, unexpected things happen, how to respond? Or
stranger danger.
Stranger danger. Like at 3 years old, if you allow them to walk to school by themselves, you know, How else do you also prepare them besides, of course, throwing them into the sea and hoping that they learn how to track water and survive?
I think that is a bit more advanced stuff that comes from you look at the probabilities of things happening. I mean, so you get from small, you tell them what things are more likely and what is less likely.
Yes.
And very often parents are impulsive and they cannot differentiate between the probability of 1 to 1,000,000 and 1 to 10. Mm. You know, these are different things. But and a million and a billion are also different things. They're 1,000 times apart, you know. So to get the kids from early a feeling of what things are likely and what are not likely, you know, can address a lot of fears.
Yeah.
You know, like my 8-year-old came the other day and said he's afraid of being hit by a comet, you know? I said, by a comet? Are you serious? That's
almost impossible.
And then tsunami. All right, you laugh, you know, but it's a real fear, you know?
For him, yeah.
Okay, so it's just a bit less likely than other things that people are afraid of, completely unnecessary.
It's true.
Whereas then they are not afraid of things which are very likely. So that's from small we discuss, you know, likelihoods and probabilities with the kids. So they can put together these, you know, that's it's like a poker player. You know, I mean, he always has to gauge what is probably, what is not probably, right?
Yeah.
And just give them this feeling.
Yeah.
Both from practical aspects, yes, as also the theoretical aspects,
yeah,
so that they can gauge. I mean, it helped. That's helped him later also, of course, in the sports, but also in navigating social situations.
To have a habit to, yeah.
Well, that was a bit more advanced, sorry.
Uh-huh. You just have to identify them instead of looking and seeing what you want to see, see who they are.
Wow.
Right. You know, you, what I always say to young parents, you know, is, don't listen to any advice, not even this one. Because the problem starts when you start to take in all sorts of auntie and relatives and
good
friends.
Advice.
Good advice, you know.
Good intention.
You know, that's when the trouble starts, because you know exactly, intuitively, what your child needs, okay? And don't listen to any advice. I mean,
and every child is different.
You know? I also tell them, yes, it's an important function of you as a young mother to receive the love, okay, of your aunties and your mothers, and you know, but just put it in a bowl, take it, accept it, accept the love, and put it somewhere else and go about your life undisturbed, you know, and because you know best what to do.
Wow. And because I think a lot of us, we as parents, we might wrestle between our own ambitions for our kids versus their own desires for themselves. How do you reconcile or navigate that? Or what is your advice for us?
No advice. Don't have ambitions for them. That's no, it's true. If you have an outcome neutral mentality, then you're not so fast by everything else that goes on, right?
Mm.
Instead of having ambitions for them.
Or expectations.
Yeah.
Right.
Why
you know,
just
my wife tells me a very robust way to find out what your spouse wants is to ask. And surprisingly, it works fairly well with kids also.
Yes.
Ask.
You know.
Ask and observe,
yes,
you know.
And don't think that just because they are 5 years old, 3 years old, or how many years old, they can't articulate. The moment you let the child articulate and you listen to them, and if you really listen to them, you will know. You will. They will tell you in no unclear terms.
Wow.
And even if they're unclear, then you understand that they are unclear.
And that itself is an answer.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
Well, they actually do it non-verbally even.
Yes, they
you know,
do
you
non-verbal.
Think you have, look, as a dad, you think you have to wait until they're like at least five and then you can do something with them. Yeah. And then, you know, you see them coming out and like after 1 minute, they look at you and like, you know, they already communicate with you non-verbally and you understand exactly what to do.
I love that. What a great reminder of removing our own lens and just looking and observing them as they are. You know, just now we were also chatting and you mentioned also about creating safe spaces at home and the environment of a safe space for our children. How is that important to you and what does a safe space look like? And was there also a particular instance where one or more of your kids, you know, open up to you in a way that made you realize that, wow, this environment of a safe space is so essential and important in a family.
Okay, so you were asking about the safe space, the important, you know, the importance of this safe space. And I think that was just communicated from small, you know, like I can remember once when I had to advise the middle one of a behavior which would be a little bit more conducive to a positive outcome, if I may say so, you know. And he took it like I rejected him or something, you know.
Right.
And then I took the little guy on my knee, you know, he was like, what, 6, 7, something like this, or 8, I don't know, 7, say, okay. And I put him on my knee and I said, look, little guy, you know, just because you made a mistake, I wouldn't reject you as little as I would cut off my foot because I knocked my toe and it hurt me, right? No, you know, you're forever a part of me, and that's out of question that I'll ever not love you. You cannot even behave. I may not want to hang out with you, but I still would love you if you do.
Unconditionally.
Whatever you do, that's anyway a given, which is out of question. This you have to never even spend any possessor power, any energy even of thinking of it, you know. I would throw my life away for you at an instant, okay?
Wow.
This is your dad, okay?
Wow.
I have lived, I'm fine. If the moment comes up, I know I'm strong enough to throw my life away without him thinking. That's your dad for you, okay? So now let's look at some suitable behaviors which may get you in the direction of the things which you actually want, you know. And here's the deal, young man, you know. You've got until 12 to benefit from my education effort. After 12, this is over. Because anyway, you know, you can't anymore, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like I can tell you at 12, mm-hmm. my mother was still like, and I looked it up for my book and said, Mom, you know, what are you telling me? I just can't reconcile what you're trying to tell me with relevant world literature. Yeah, that's it. You know, it's over. At 12, it's over and you switch into, how do you say, steering your course and string coaching calls if they want to know something. But I'm for sure not telling you anything afterwards, you know. If you want to keep your elbow on your table after that, you know, good luck, you know. I may or may not want to be your company then, but, you know.
Well, that's very interesting, Valentin, if I may dig deeper, because what is the role that you see you having as a parent from 0 to 12 and then 13 to the rest of their lives?
I would say from most parents, you know, get themselves into unpleasant situations and their kids into lots of grief for trying to educate them after 12. I mean, it's like you're trying to educate the 15-year-old. It's like the French call it like cherche midi à 14h, which means like looking for noon at 2 o'clock. It's over, you know. Mm. Yeah?
And very often, if they have issues at teenagers, during their teenage years, it didn't start there. It's from way back. It's already from, I don't know, probably
right. So
before
you
six.
Ask me what roles do the parents have? Yeah. I believe you just steer your course, you lead your life, okay? And if that you because until they're kind of grown up and they're their own people, they need maybe, you know, max maybe a little bit faster, others a little bit longer. But you know, you're your own person 10 years later, okay? Mm. Where when you make something stupid, you don't think, oh, what's mom going to say? Okay, then you start to be grown up, right?
It's yeah. true.
Right?
Yeah.
So in that time, during that time, they need some kind of a reference point. And if you as parents, you just do it, you know, you lead your life and you can remain the reference point. If you try to cramp their style, they will just use somebody else. Some gang leader, peer, some pop star, whatever. They will just take away you as a reference. But as long as you're there without cramping their style, they can use you as a hopefully healthy reference. You know, and they may come to you and say, okay, what do you think about this or that? You know, then you answer this as a coaching call, but not as a...
No judgments. Very important, I think.
Is it very hard too?
Yes. No. Yes. For me, it's hard.
Why not?
Not to make judgments. Mm. I mean, not to communicate your opinion.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm.
Is there an example you can walk us through? Like, you know...
Okay, if I don't really think a certain company is good
right
for my child or for my teenage boy, I don't say I don't like you, this person. Mm-hmm. I will ask, what do you like about this person? What is this, you know, how does this person attract you? What do you think you can, you know, what from hanging out with the person, what do you get? Mm. What do you like? What you don't like? And if I see that he has the ability to differentiate and he makes, then I'm fine. He can go with this person.
I love it. And I'm learning so much also. And I'm just wondering, are there any family rituals that you have as parents with your kids, especially during, their growing up?
No, yes. during COVID we had. Because during COVID we were forced. I mean, we came together and we stayed in Switzerland. And every meal time we had this ritual, remember, of saying gratitude.
One of us
have to, instead of saying grace, we say gratitude.
Yeah.
It's a gratitude session. So everybody gets a turn to say what they're grateful for. Yeah. So we want them to practice that.
No, but like, I would say deeply,
even the younger one.
Yes.
Look, I think deeply, more deeply engraved the rituals were that we let the kids always be close to us. You know what I mean? So for example, they, as long as they wanted, they could be sleeping with us. I had her boy one sleepless night about that. You know? That, but because they slept with us. You know what I mean? The older boys only moved out of our bed once the young guy was disturbing along. Them.
And they felt
they're like, oh no, we need to go now. Yeah,
they
want to
peace,
go.
Their yeah. peace and quiet.
But so there was wow. there was just like, you know, their warm core where, you know, like the middle one. I mean, you didn't see the guy the whole day. You know, but at night he crawled in and there was his size.
He wants his hug.
Like, yeah.
Wow.
Right.
Wow. You know, I think in one of your interviews, you also shared that, you know, Max, when he was in Spain by himself, he confided in both of you that he felt overwhelmed.
Yes.
And in that instance, what did that show you as parents? And how do you also then navigate, you know, again, the balance of pushing your child, yet also wanting to support them?
Okay, look, I remember that fairly well, that instance in Spain, you know. I mean, he was traveling a few times already alone, and then there was that particular...
And how old was he at that time?
11,
yeah.
12?
11, yeah, between 11 and 12, yeah.
So he had to, we rented an apartment for him. He had to cook, shop, everything, wash, you know, and then there was like very tough conditions, like... Yeah. High winds, high waves, you know, and like everything was wet, you know, and cold. And and then he called us and said, like, hey, it's you know, because he started to get good also and started to beat older ones already, which,
wow.
so that they didn't find him such a cute
little
anymore.
Boy anymore. Yeah.
It was embarrassing, some of them. So he started to feel a bit isolated. So we said, like, okay, good, you know, and he said, you know, he needs a bit of assistance.
Yeah.
Okay. From there we said, like, okay, good. We make sure that he has a bit more assistance. Okay. And a bit of warmth and support, you know, and just tweaked that a little bit, and then from then on it worked again.
But then we, of course, like we say, go back to the safe space, and we always, you know, because we've established a certain bond, right?
Yeah.
They're always free to come back to say, no, we can't. And then we'll step in, you know.
Yeah,
that's why I say, you know, like
never ridicule, never judge, never make fun. just give what you know, take in the signals and do what we feel would be good for them.
You know, Max has been now, 12 years kiting, whereof about eight years pretty much as a professional. He hasn't had as much as a scratch.
Yeah.
Okay. No torn ligaments. No, muscle stretch, no cuts, no concussions, nothing.
Wow. Because
that's true.
Yeah. But safety is always a very high on our priority list. Right. So when it's safety issues, we don't consult them anymore. We inform them.
Non-negotiable.
No, we inform.
I mean, they went to this skate park, pump track. I think they came back after one morning with more bruises and
then his entire career,
it's not
as
dangerous as you think. I mean, yeah,
you know, in high pressure situations like competitions, mistakes are inevitable. How do you as parents help them process their failures constructively while also maintaining their self-confidence?
You have to look a little bit deeper for this. Okay, bear with me. Look, let's say years, well-meaning parents basking in the soft glow of parental pride, you know, want to tell our kids, hey boy, you've got this, okay? So what do we do when you say you've got this? We put a bit of expectations. We load a little bit of expectations on them, you know, they're kind of like, oh, okay, I should have this, okay, I should go out and get this. And then, what if not? Okay, so the issue is, kids don't mind to fail. Look at any toddler, you know. They all walk after. They all talk after a while, more than you want. So, but how did they get there? By, you know, try, fall. They don't mind to fail. They only start to mind to fail once you start to put expectations on them, and once they start to fear to disappoint you, because what the kids don't mind to fail, but they mind to lose the connection to you or to damage the connection to you, right? So if from small, okay, you communicate not you've got this, but, you know, go out and try, you're fit to try, you know, you never mind if you fail, just try again, you know. We've got you if you need some more assistance, you know, you just let us know, and otherwise just try again, you'll see, you'll overcome, you know.
Celebrate their efforts as much as you celebrate their successes.
Right, exactly. So and then from overcoming themselves, you know, they will build confidence.
Resilience.
I can do this, you know. Because very often they quickly build higher expectations in themselves. You actually need to
help them scale it back.
Yeah, you need to protect them from their own ambition. Yeah. You know what I mean? To say, like, hey, don't be so hard on yourself. But I would say that's a key thing at the soft core from, look, you're free to try. You know, it's fine to fail. Don't worry. You know, we are there for you.
Wow.
That's where it comes from.
So shifting from you've got this to we've got you.
That's at the core makes them afterwards confident in their own ability to overcome challenges, to try new things, and the belief that this can, you know, whatever, you try 15 different things and one thing you can keep, you know, it's actually a little innovation that gets you a slight advantage in competition, and that's fun.
And we always say that success means try again.
Yeah, success
you
means
try again.
You
are unlikely to get it on the first try.
Huh?
Maybe you need 10 tries, maybe you need 15 tries, maybe you need 100 tries. Does not matter.
There comes the role of the parents. It's like, you know, I told them learning, you know, by definition means enjoying to look incompetent for a good while, you know?
Wow, yes. Learning means enjoying to look incompetent for a good while.
Yes. Yeah, you as a parent can go ahead.
We as adults also have to.
Exactly. You have to make fools of yourselves, you know?
Yes,
exactly.
Modeling that for them.
Yeah, just make fool of themselves. You know, parents need to make fool of themselves and just try and fail and just show them.
And at our age, we get to learn the learning process a little bit longer.
Yeah,
we get to enjoy the learning process.
Yeah.
Like me, I'm still enjoying the process.
Right. Wow. Another component, of this bouncing back and of overcoming is, again, another soft thing. It's how comfortable you as parents show that you struggle with vulnerability and human limits.
Yes.
Okay? If actually something I say is like only the strong get to enjoy the privilege of being vulnerable. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
I say that again. Okay? Only the strong get to enjoy the privilege of enjoying the benefits of vulnerability.
Mm.
Most less strong people have to shield and guard themselves from it and can never show their kids the importance of dealing with their limits,
own
accepting
limits.
Their limits, you know, understanding their limits,
and then overcoming
and managing them. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
So, for example, the little brother of Max asking, Max, why is it that in the race, you know, in training, your sparring partner seems to be at least as fast as you and always...
Sometimes even beat you and overtake you,
but in race, you always win. Why is that? And he says, like, look, young brother, this is because I have stage fright. I sometimes delude myself completely about the nature of a situation and I make wrong judgments, you know. I'm tired and make my own mistakes when I'm tired and I have a hard time to get out of negative thoughts when I made a mistake and so on, you know. But I just manage it a little bit better than the other guys.
Wow.
You know? So that comes from that. When you as parents show them, hey, look, this situation messed with my mind, you know, and I had to do this and that. Mm. And you show them that as you're comfortable with
your
limits. And it's normal and natural, you see. Mm. And that you also show them where it hurts and say, look, this also has a signaling function, you know, that you, when you feel the pain, when you feel, you know, that other people with the same neurology go to the same experience, so you can pick this up and so on. You know what I mean? So that comes from, that's why I also say, as parents, it's very important not to be too perfect because...
They give too much pressure for the
children. Yeah, it just stresses them, you know?
Stress the children.
So they will forgive you for being not perfect and for making mistakes, you know, and for being vulnerable and overwhelmed and for expressing it. They will not stop loving you, you know, not at all. You know, it more stresses them if you want to appear too perfect, you know, right?
Yeah.
So, okay, these two soft things of not burdening them with expectations and at the same time, you know, making them comfortable with dealing with their own limits leads then to how quickly they bounce back because it comes from a deep place of confidence.
Right. Wow. And so that means as parents, we first have to also, like you said, show our vulnerability, talking them through our own challenges and struggles and explaining to them.
Yeah, and we often are afraid to show these vulnerabilities because we were afraid that we would disappoint our parents if we showed them, you know, and so we just repeat it.
Yeah. It's true. Well, both of you raised this way too.
In which way?
In the way that right now you are parenting your kids, where it's more also that openness and that vulnerability. Because from my parents' generation and growing up, you know, it was always that we don't talk about our problems at the dinner table. No one shows signs of weaknesses, for example. And therefore, you know, we could not learn from our parents' examples in that sense of building resilience, mental strength, and bouncing back when we fall.
You know, for me, I think that our parents had different priorities.
Yeah.
And they don't have the same luxury like we have. My dad often, you know, blames himself for bad parenting or whatever. I say, no, you parent at your times.
The best you know how.
The best you know how. Mm-hmm. You didn't have Google at your hands. You didn't have a lot of literature. You didn't have the time to think about how you want to parent so that, you know, I am in a different space and time.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I won't make that comparison. And of course, we were not brought up. I was not brought up like that at all. You know, but this is just the way it is.
Yeah.
Right? But we want different things, different times.
Yeah.
And I certainly don't want my children to grow up like I was, how I grew up during this time. You know?
Yeah.
Wouldn't be useful for them.
Look, and another thing which I think is important is to show them early that they are an important contributing part to the family.
Yeah.
You know, that they represent the family. That they, like I say to Max, you know, like, what was it, like a year ago, I said, hey, Max, you know, I want to thank you for really having become an important pillar of our family. And, you know, just thank them, you know, because...
And expressing gratitude, which reminds me of the example that you shared, that now Max, actually as a teenager, I mean, since he was a teenager, has been expressing gratitude to both of you.
Yeah. It's not one way. It's always a two-way process.
Yeah, he must have seen it modeled and in his life,
but
you know, from you.
He's thankful to us, but we should also be thankful to him. We should also be thankful to our kids.
And to show them that they have become an important pillar and contributor to the family doesn't hurt them. You know, I mean, sometimes I see parents hesitating to praise their kids because they think they spoil them. Well, you know, I don't think praise spoils them.
Yeah.
I think it's important. I always told the kids also in communicating with others, people are incredibly robust when it comes to even undeserved compliments. But they're much less sensitive, much more sensitive to any even alluded criticism.
Yeah.
You know? You might as well abstract from criticism and just go straight for that.
But I think this is an important point for Asian parents, right? Because we always feel, and I've always been told, don't give your children too much, you know, too many praises.
Yeah.
It gets over their head. They become too big-headed. And in withholding what the praises that are rightful to the children, we deprive them the confidence we can give them. You know, the healthy confidence. You know, and they always think that Asian parents always think that if I praise my children, they're going to get arrogant. They're going to slack. They're going to do that. And we hold a lot of this. And I think it's not.
It becomes very unhealthy. I know of a lot of adult friends who till today yearn for just their elderly parents.
Because this gentleman, he's like over 60 and he's still wanting the acknowledgement from his dad.
And they overcompensate in different ways. It builds in that sense also that trauma and conditioning.
That's why I stress this, because this is really, don't hold back your praises when it's due to the children. If they do something well, say that they did something else. You don't have to say everything they do well, but when they do something well, make a point to say to them.
One of the issues, if you tell a kid going to school, like all of them do, and you tell them all the time, look, be a good boy, get good grades, you will be given a good post. Okay? Right?
Which is what?
Which is inculcates a sense of entitlement. So the kids come out and say, like, oh, you know, now I've got my degree, now world, give me.
Right? Sense of entitlement.
As opposed to, hey, kid, the fact that you're grown halfway straight and born into a functional family and you're right in your head and your country is a privilege. And it's a privilege, and that this privilege comes with the obligation to take others along who are not as fortunate, maybe. You know, your sense of contribution from small, not wait until you're 55 and you can give away a few millions, you know?
I love that, you know. And what is your approach then to discipline?
I tried discipline with the two older ones. I tried discipline. It was like what? Like one was like a year and a quarter. I tried for an hour.
Even with Jay, you tried. But
And then I said, like, hey, look, after an hour, I said, like, we just got an hour older, lots of tears, okay? Didn't get us anywhere, so you know what? I tried the soft way. And I've never ever disciplined the kid ever since. Okay, just never.
Wow. Yeah, discipline is when we think of discipline, we think of like punishments,
correcting.
Correcting them, or more harsh. You know, something that's more harsh. But we always believe, you know, it's better to talk softly and act firmly. And it works much better, at least in our family. Because if they're anything like us, you don't go very far with your hard ways. I tried to.
Yeah, it was
physical punishment. And then he said, what are you going to do?
You're going to escalate it.
Yeah, how are you going to escalate it? First, you use the cane. Then you're going to use the rod. Then you're going to, and in the end, you're going to brand him like a cow. You use this iron thing. And because my second son is really hard-headed, you know, he says, you want to punish me? No need. I do it myself. Bangs his head on the wall.
Wow.
I tried to lock him up. He says, you know, I was so worried because after some time he was. I opened the door. He says, Mom, you wanted to lock me in, so please close the door and lock it behind you.
Oh, wow.
You know, what are you going
to
do with
anyway, look, it's much better to you know, approach it with love. The good thing about love is it never runs out of stock.
For children,
For anybody.
Yeah.
Never runs out of stock, right?
Yeah, it's true. Yeah.
When you take it out, you can get more.
In doubt, add a little bit more, you know. So
abundance,
Right?
Yeah.
And you know, you can give some kids sometimes, you know. It's okay, look, actually, you know, just you know, consider why things are done like that. Why do you not pick with the mouth full of food? Why don't you put the elbow on the table? Why do you, you
know? What is signaling?
Is the rule? What is the role?
What are you telling people? Yes.
Explain and then let it sink in, you know? And then suddenly they get it, you know? Sometimes you have to tell it a few times. But you say, like, look, this is a more suitable behavior that gets you further. You know what I mean?
And I would love to switch gears just a little bit to focus on as a couple, you know? Are there times where you've had differences in opinions or point of view or decisions? And how do you reconcile that?
There's only one time and it lasted till now. Since we met, we have differences and it lasted till now.
That's the one time. Since we're together. Yeah.
No, I think we always, you know, as individuals, we will always have differences. And even we show our differences to our kids. But I think more importantly, you have to show the kids how you reconcile the differences. It's not the differences. Everyone has differences. You know, but if you live under a roof, you are going to have differences played out.
Yeah.
I think the bigger thing is how do you reconcile them?
Work through and repair from there. Wow.
And then we share with our children.
And as a couple also, you know, with the demands of parenting and especially with kids that are taking part in like competitions and elite athletes, basically. How do you also carve out time and space to ensure that you also focus on yourselves as individuals and yourselves as a couple?
As a mom, I consider myself a dedicated mom. You always have to do something for yourself. So I take up a new skill every so and so years. I try to challenge myself. I said, I want to do this. And I did, and I put certain things on my list, and I would tell him, and he's very nice. He supports me most of the time. I say, okay, I want to do this. And it's a big skill or a big challenge for myself, and I always want to upgrade myself. Also because I think it's very important to show the children that at the end of the day, you always also have to challenge yourself. You always have to learn, no matter how old you are, how much you've grown or whatever it is, you know, it's a never ending process, right? In Chinese, we say,
活到老,学到老.
And that's very important. And I feel that a lot of working women maybe have less of this issue, but for like full-time homemakers, at the end of the day, when the children leave the nest, it can leave a very big empty hole. And if you don't start to look out for yourself, you start to have too much hopes on the children. And that's when you become obsessive.
And becomes very unhealthy.
Yes. Yeah. And then you want, you know, you want certain outcomes because it's not for the children, it's for you.
Yeah.
That's why when your ambitions start to speak and not theirs.
Yeah.
But if you have your own goals and you work towards them,
yeah,
alongside, of course, you will not have priorities, but when you have opportunities, there will be.
Mm.
It's a matter of priorities.
Yeah.
And then you feel more fulfilled yourself. So you don't have to seek fulfillment in the kids, you know? And I think that's a lot for me.
Wow.
The Asian parenting.
Yeah. Like taking care of yourself and also taking the effort to fill your own cup.
Yes.
Yeah. So that you can pour better into their lives.
And also, you know, differentiate between your goals and their goals.
Wow.
Don't make your goals their goals. I think that's what a lot of parents
do. That's powerful. I recently also had a chance, you know, to get to know this author. She's a palliative nurse and she's been taking care of people in their dying days over the last 30 years. And she said the number one regret that people have on their deathbed is that they wish they had lived a life that's true to themselves than a life that their parents or society had expected of them. And also in a world today where as parents, you know, we usually get so many different points of views or opinions. A lot of them are good intentioned. But for yourselves also, you know, having chosen to pursue a unique path for your kids like Max, do you often also sometimes feel like, you know, you want to give in to societal expectations or pressures or certain criticisms that might come along the way from the decisions that you make for your kids? And how do you navigate and balance that, if at all?
I think I feel it more than him. And of course, we come from very conservative backgrounds where we think that at least like 15 years ago or maybe even 10 years ago, where people feel that, you know, to go your own way, it's really the wrong way.
Mm.
And we have been told in our faces that we are selfish parents, we are this, we are that. Or at least I have been had this conversation and people are often surprised. But that's something that only the person who's doing it can tell. I know for me, it was hard. And I'm lucky because he is very strong in his... He's very steadfast. He doesn't let opinions...
Doesn't waver just by the opinions of and the noises of the world.
Yes. I have to do a little bit more work on myself to overcome the, you know... the pressure to cave and to say, but it helps when I'm not in that
it's
environment.
It's often like this, you know, in the history of the world, it was often you do something crazy for long enough, suddenly people think it's cool.
Yeah. Yes. What I was criticized heavily yesterday is not today. I'm celebrating
the fruits of your labor.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I said the same process would not have such an audience if I didn't have such a good outcome. When you decide to do something that is not in the mainstream.
Conventional.
Yeah. Or not conventional, or not what's expected, then be ready for the swimming upstream.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm.
And take away the noise. Take away the noise. Mm. Understand your own goal.
Yeah.
And take away the noise.
You know, like for example, we with our kids, we take a fairly, how you say, or me at least, in the discussion, I say, for example, to Max, you know, Max, anybody else's expectation management issues don't make you faster around the course.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay, so, you know, she was under fire. I remember there was like a class gathering, you know, she was under fire. Everybody was like very keen, you know, to say like, we moved to this area so we can get the girls into this school. You know, everybody very eager, you know, like all the mothers. And then they say, where do your kids go to school? No, they don't go to school. But a degree is important. She said, like, yeah, I guess they will look at the degrees of the people they're going to employ. But, you know, we raise employers. We don't
raise decision employees. Makers.
You know? Wow.
So you shift the context and the frame a little bit, you know, and then some questions
lighthearted, funny.
But also
speak the truth in the joke.
But also, were you trembling inside? Because it's almost like, you know,
we
hope that.
I don't tremble.
Wow, there's so much courage that we can really draw.
I mean, what's courage? You know, I said the other day, it's only. It's like, guys. In other times, you know, people with 18, you know what I mean? They let empires, to into wars, you know.
Yes.
And come on.
Yes.
There's much more that kids can do than you let them do these things.
Yes, you first let them.
You know, Huiqing and Valentin, as we wrap up also, what are some final words of encouragement that you can have for parents who are also looking to you as inspiration and examples on raising strong, independent children?
I would say if there's anything which was important in what you say, is allow yourself to look at your kids and say, hey, can they master life? Yes, no, and then when you see, seem to be doing fine, ease off the pressure, ease off the expectations, and just signal to them that you're their safe space, that you're there for them, that you've got them. And let it play out and enjoy them.
Yes.
I hear a lot of negatively connotated suffering, sacrifice. Yeah. No, I mean, if anything, I ask any of my friends, hey, kids is the best thing they did in their life. They enjoy it. It makes them happy. It's the source of joy.
And that's what I wanted to add to. Don't be so stressed about thinking about providing the best for them and wanting them to have a best life. I think the best thing is if you enjoy them. Find time and space to enjoy your children. And, because all you hear about parenting is always, I have a headache about this, about that, and then the PSLE is coming, and the O-level is coming. Why? I don't understand. Enjoy them. Enjoy them because they grow up so fast.
Mm.
Before you know it, you have lost the opportunity.
Because if they, and another issue is, think of Singapore, if you don't enjoy kids, birth rate is going to go down even further,
If you don't enjoy having them and you only lament about, the work, the challenges, and do you think they want to have families?
Right.
I mean, that's the example you're showing them. So much hard work, so much hardship, so much pain.
And financial
so much
investment.
Yes. What is it? What message are you sending them?
If you want your kid to remember just one thing about family, about you as a dad, about you as a mom, what would it be?
Okay, I mean, there was a time when I asked Max, he was maybe 8 years old or so, I said, just as we were discussing all sorts of philosophical questions, and at the time we were lying in a hammock and watching the universe, and I asked him, just what would we do if we knew that I would die in 2 months' time, And then he became really silent, And he said, I probably would show you that I'm interested in something, and you would learn together more about the stars than you just discussed. And you would also learn about this together, He showed me that he realizes that I so much enjoyed to look at the world
universe,
together with him. And that this is one of my, that he understood this is one of my biggest joys, my biggest luxury is to actually look together with him at the world and open the world with him, And he wanted to give me more of this, which he felt that I
enjoy in your last days together.
Yeah, exactly. There is no much bigger pleasures than learning about new things with your kids, and learning together. And
going through the journey with them together. I think they appreciate it. And we don't realize it. They will tell you. And then these are the moments where you go, these are the aha moments.
So very soft. At the core is very soft little tweaks of how you look at things. That's all.
Wow. Huiqing, you have any last words that you want to share with those of us listening?
I say, give children the space that let them have a childhood.
Mm.
Let them enjoy. And enjoy them as much as you let them enjoy. Yeah.
Wow. Thank you so much. Yeah. This has been so good. Thank you so much, Valentin, Huiqing. This was such a impactful conversation for me personally too. So thank you.
Thank you.